On this week's episode of The Division, Cammy returns to talk about The Walking Dead. We have a little postmortem in which we come to bury The Walking Dead, not the present. After that, we three comment on the Golden Globes. We talk about the major nominations, as it were, for all the big categories in TV. And finally, we wrap up this episode talking about this season of The Amazing Race. So stay tuned.
Throw away your television. Take the noose off your ambition. Reinvent your intuition now. It's a repeat. All the story told. It's a repeat. And it's getting old.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Television Division. I am your showrunner, Arthur Robinson, and with me, as always, are... soon to be always.
It's mostly always.
Mostly always. That's the adjective I was looking for, Seth. And joining us this week is Cammy from Cammy's Comic Corner, finally here to talk about Walking Dead.
Special guest appearance by Cammy from Cammy's Comic Corner.
Exactly.
His previous work has included The Fourth Wall on Comic Podcast and Geeky Talkie. And he's soon to be nominated for a Golden Globe. It's exciting stuff.
They added a podcast team?
Yes, just for me. It's a lifetime achievement award.
Lifetime? How old are you? How long have you been doing this? This is amazing.
That question's personal.
Okay. Well, let's not go there.
I'm sorry. Continue.
Oh, you're good. I respect your boundaries. About the Geeky Talkie thing. I've been commenting on those two Geeky Talkies that you've done for the first half and the second half of Walking Dead. The 4, 5, 6 I think was probably the latest one that you've done.
And episode 44. Yes.
Yes, and we kind of did you did a lovely recap for each of those episodes, and then
you helped with that lovely recap. Don't sell yourself short. It was great.
I made witty comments. That was fun.
You guys want to get around?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
That's kind of personal. I don't want to discuss that.
Thank you, Seth, for keeping me on track. Walking Dead postmortem. That's pretty much what we're getting right into. Before I lay in what I want to say, does anybody just want to go in and just air your thoughts? Everything's on the table. Whatever you felt about this season, by all means, before, I get rolling.
Well, I'll start off. I mean, I think it was a good opening season, I guess you can say, to test the water, see if people are going to, if more than the comic book contingent are going to be watching this show. Is it going to get 4 million viewers or is it going to get 10 million viewers? It did fairly well. So that's why they got a second season, and I think there's only more good to come from it. I think it did very well, and people were pleased with it, and that's why it got re-upped.
But I mean, to me, I'm not slamming your point, because I do feel like that is, that's fact. But I also felt that I'm hearing a lot of consensus where I think. The vast majority of the people who watched it agreed that the pilot's great, but then the season kind of as a whole was a little bit disappointing, and I wanted to see, especially you, Cammy, what your thoughts are on that.
Well, it's interesting because while it was a success on one end, what actually happened in the season, that's a completely different thing. And I think one of the main reasons why it didn't really float well with a certain amount of people is when you hear zombies, you think of, what you saw in the movies, what you saw in previous reincarnations of like Romero or, remakes like Zack Snyder, where it's always action packed. Shit's always going down. Where with The Walking Dead, it's going to take a little longer since it's in that television format to get the suspense, to, get what's happening. Because a lot of people, they were expecting like, like gore throughout or scares around every corner. But when you actually this audience isn't used to storytelling. They're not used to actually having a bigger meeting in movies or genres like this. So to actually have to sit through there and listen to dialogue and wait for a zombie to make an appearance, I'm sure it was a little off-putting to some. But, you know, it's 6 million viewers. Can they be wrong? Who knows? I mean, look at all these awards they're getting. They're getting nominated for, like, the Writers Guild of America. They're, you know, Golden Globes, American Film Institute. All of these big, you know, established organizations are giving it praise, and I think it's well-deserved.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, because I didn't – because to me, when I saw this season, and I guess it's the overall tone of the show and the directions they decided to take, but I felt I don't want to say it's undeserved, but I do feel like maybe it's a little too much acclaim, because like going over these episodes again, you know, just you know doing a quick overview over the past couple of days, it didn't feel like it deserved the Entertainment Weekly, you know, best new series of 2010. I didn't feel.
So you think it's a little premature? It hasn't settled in yet with the population.
Well, I guess to me it's like are you guys really going this over the top? I mean, this season to me was uneven at best, and there were highlights and there were moments, but I didn't feel like a cohesive episode was. Like after the pilot wasn't as great or as strong as the other, you know, like as it continued on going, it was just, it kept going in these directions and there were flaws and writing issues and stuff like that, which I'll delve into further. But I just felt like, you know, like you mentioned Golden Globes and stuff like that. I mean, it is nominated. It's nominated for Best New Drama. And not even Best New Drama, it's just nominated for Best Drama. And I just felt that, first of all, that doesn't make any sense, because I'm like, why is 6 episodes make it a drama? I mean, you know, like, it should be a miniseries or something. Like, I don't understand the qualification for that. And we'll have to get to that when we get to our Golden Globes topics. But to me, it just felt like there are so many better shows. I mean, even on its own network, like Breaking Bad didn't get nominated. And I love that show. I do believe it's it's the best show on television or currently or whatever, but I felt like so many things that were so much better for it, and I just felt that because of Frank Darabont, because of a lot of the actors who've done movies, and it sort of translated into it, and it just kind of, it felt undeserved.
I got a question. If you were going into it, like, could you see yourself going into this and seeing it from the perspective of not knowing anything about the history and anything about the comic book?
Well, that's why I got Seth right here.
That's why I'm because I knew nothing about the comic book. I found out that it was a comic book maybe a week before the pilot came out. So it was like, oh, this is based on a comic book? Oh, okay. All right, well, that still doesn't change the fact that I might be interested in it.
But is it enough, though, to make you interested in the second season?
I mean, after watching the first season.
At the first, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to watch it. I mean, okay. I want to know what goes on from here. I mean, we've discussed, you know, the topics come up that it's, you know, through the 6 episodes, it's been a 2-episode cycle where they do something in one area in the first episode, and then in the second episode they have to travel somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then the third episode they have to do something in that area, and then the fourth episode they have to travel back to somewhere or travel somewhere else. And it's in a, you know, through the 6 episodes it's pretty much maintained that. So now, you know, after the 6th episode, the finale, they're traveling somewhere. I'm interested, yes, in to see where they go. And I'm also and after last week's discussion on our podcast with that this whole CDC thing was never written into the comic book, apparently. I found that, you know, Art mentioned or someone else mentioned it. And that there were aspects of the show that were not in the comic book leads me to believe, and I'm also kind of secretly happy, that they're going to bring new things that people may not know or expect to be on the show, if it's new scenarios, new characters, new locations. You know, those are all those are all welcomed, and I look forward to possibly seeing these things that no one else has seen. So I'm not as much as at a disadvantage going, well, I know what's going to happen. I know coming around this corner, this character is going to live or this character is going to die, so on and so forth.
I think that's part of the fun for Art myself is we know what's going to happen. And so one of the reasons we're still watching is to see when it's going to happen or how they're going to approach the subject or if certain characters aren't going to die or live like they do in the comic book. It's going to be interesting to see. And then, you know, if you have some good acting and good cinematography, then that's a plus.
Yeah. And then before I go back to that first topic, I want to go down with Cammy saying, because I do feel like, yeah, I agree. I mean, I do want to see more of that. I would love more in that direction. Because it felt to me when I was watching these maybe too invested in the comic book, because I felt the people that we have after these six episodes going on to the new season are pretty much people from the comic. You know, like they're just Shane and Rick and all those guys. They're all main staples from the book. So it felt a little bit too, I guess, like a roller coaster ride. You know, it felt the track was already laid down. Everything's already established. There wasn't that sort of, I can't think of the word, but you know, there wasn't that kind of spontaneity. There wasn't that kind of the people that we have were designed to make it to season two, and the people, like, everybody who died, you know, was already, like, Amy was supposed to die. Like, that's not really a spoiler, but that's sort of she was, and then everybody else was just sort of, you know, manufactured to create moments. And then I did feel like I was very confused. You know, going back to episode two, I just felt, why create these characters if they're just, you know, not if they're either straw men, like the Ed character with Carol, you know, Carol had a husband, Ed, wife beater, you know, and then it just, that was wrong for so many reasons. I think the main reason why it was wrong was just sort of like, it's 2010 in this day and age, we're sort of using a wife beater and, you know, seeing him beaten up, and that's a source of entertainment, but that's sort of beside the point. But, you know, like there was no point of having him there just to have him die. There's an underlying line of like creative choices, and I never understood why they went in certain directions. But going back to what Seth said, yeah, I got my thinking cap on, so like I'm really, really hyped up. But we have so many different, I guess, types of people watching this show, because we have the people, Cammy and I read the source material. Seth haven't read the source material, but have seen zombie films and stuff like that. I would love to see sort of a group represented. I guess I'd have to like grab one of my parents or something, but that haven't seen zombie films, and I wanted to see how they felt about that, because me being not only a source material fan and watching zombie films as a kid, and then there's like Lost parallels and Battlestar parallels that I'm going to get to later on, but I just felt a lot of the stuff I've seen before, and we talked about this last week too, it was the tropes, you know, like there's the, you know, stereotypical characters. There's the scene where we explain the rules about how being a zombie and how, all that kind of stuff. And I did feel that was one of my major concerns about the series, which was who was really like going the mindset of the audience behind it. Because to me, it felt like it was just really focusing on a lot of the AMC audience that have never seen zombie films before, or have never, I guess, never seen that sort of thing. And I felt that they were kind of either not misrepresenting the audience, but I guess they just didn't take it into account. And I felt that was sort of insulting the audience intelligence. But what do you guys think about that one?
Well, I tried to get my dad originally to watch it because he was a fan of a couple other things on AMC. Like, he's halfway through season two of Breaking Bad, and I keep telling him, like, hey, if you're gonna like this, you might like that. You might like this, you might like that. Mm-hmm. And especially, like, he was into some of the HBO stuff that was kind of along this realm. Like, he watched the first season of True Blood. So, like, he's not the kind of guy who's gonna hear, like, oh, it's fantasy, it's horror, whatever. I'm gonna just dismiss it. But when it came to the pitch of its surviving in a post-apocalyptic landscape with the undead rising, for whatever reason, he just thought, you know what, I'm cool. I don't need to watch this. And a lot of friends who aren't really zombie fans, that's what's keeping them away. But then you hear people who, you know, say, well, I wasn't a fan of zombies, but the drama in this, you know, really got me, or, you know, the whole story behind it. So when it comes to, yeah, just finding the proper audience, or on AMC's part, trying to market it to the correct audience, yeah, you might want to, yeah, try to expand outside of the conventions and outside of the comic book stores and the usual breeding grounds for the geek culture.
I mean, on one point that Art made, I think it'd be really hard pressed to find someone that has never seen or read any zombie, you know, any zombie material. Like, mm-hmm. most people, since zombies have been around since, what, 60s, 70s, right?
Yeah, Romero, so 65 or something, I want to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, people, I'll take my parents, for example. My dad was already 15, you know, 15, 16, when the first Night of the Living Dead came out. So he's been, you know, he's heard or seen or at least known about zombie and zombie film and zombie, you know, myth lore for a good portion of his life, you know. Now, does he watch it? I don't think so. He probably doesn't have cable. So so that's maybe one of his drawbacks. However, if I told him, hey, you know what, you might like this show because it's just not about zombies eating people. It's about the people living in a zombie apocalypse, you know, let's say. And, you know, knowing that he was a big fan of X-Files and the one that came after X-Files with the circle thing. I don't know. Anyways,
Carnival?
Not Carnival. It was on Fox.
Millennium.
Millennium.
He was a big fan of Millennium. So knowing his track record, he might be inclined to watch it, even though he hears zombies, he'd probably be like, eh. But if I tell him, like, hey, you know, it's like X-Files, kind of touches on it, but it's more about the human element, he might take a peek at it, and that might make him watch it, you know, try to watch it on the second season. It's hard to say, though, reaching outside its normal fan base, only because people just tend to, you know, as you were saying, Cam, people tend, you know, they hear zombies, they think blood, horror, gore, and they tend to stay away. It's hard to change that outlook on a show. I hope they do. They change it somehow that it's more about humans, not zombies. But, you know, we'll see.
And, yeah, going with the shows that you mentioned, you know, those sci-fi, supernatural, so on and so forth, element to shows. I also felt, and I guess this is just me, just like hearing blogs and stuff, you know, just grabbing research for this, but I did feel that, if not Battlestar, but definitely Lost, I felt like casted a huge shadow over the show. Because a lot of the elements are kind of the same. It's a group of survivors trying to, get to a semblance of home, and then trying to survive the outside forces around them. And then I think, when they got to the CDC, I think those elements were very evident, you know, like the whisper scene and all that kind of stuff. Like, we're gonna answer a question, but not really answer a question. Or, you know, like, we're going to answer a question that you kind of already know because you've seen a zombie film before, that sort of thing. So it seemed to me like, I guess I understand that direction as well, because, you know, like, if you're not going to get somebody from a zombie film aspect, then you'll get them from a Lost aspect, because Lost, you know, big fan base. It's a similar type of story, I guess. It's the best thing I can kind of say, and the similarities are there. But to me, I think the problem that another main problem, I think, with the show, and this was one that I just kind of came up with for this podcast, but I thought about it, and I felt like the characters aren't really, I guess they are characters to me. Like, they're not, I don't feel a visceral reaction to them. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I like about the show, I guess, you know, like, hey, it's Shane and it's Rick, and it's, you know, that all those people. No, I guess what I'm trying to say. The people aren't people, they're characters. They're not even characters at some times, they're caricatures. And I feel like a lot of the mileage I'm getting from it or by it is, you know, Rick is Jack, or Rick is the character that I read in the story. And I can get behind them, and I can get behind the actors, some of the actors portraying them. Like, I do feel like Jeffrey Lemon, who's being Dale, and Lori Holden, who's Andrea, like, I feel like I'm more supporting the actors behind them, but I still don't feel like these people are people. And I guess, what did you guys feel about that? Because it's like, Lost, I think I knew who Locke and Jack and Sawyer and all those people were from day one, and I could still resonate with those people. But for here, they still feel like archetypes.
I mean, maybe they're going the route of you don't really need to know their backstory all that much. Like, just take them as they are right now. I'm with you. I don't care about the characters. I just want to care. I just care about seeing what happens next and what situations they come through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if like the whole zombie attack the camp at night, that, I was like, whoa, that's surprising. You know, that kind of intrigued me. But did I care that, you know, they lost three people or three people got bitten? Nah, not really. I think also it's the whole, I'm not in that situation. This isn't a situation that I can relate to. I can't really relate to a zombie attack. Sorry. You know, that's pulling myself out of the storyline, out of the element. But do I really care about the characters? No, not really. Do I want to see what happens? Is this crazy? Yeah. You know, maybe I can learn something in case a zombie apocalypse really does happen.
It will. You just got to be prepared when it finally does. Yeah.
It's more. These are more educational videos than.
Yes, exactly.
It's on the wrong channel. It should really be on the History Network or the Learning Channel.
Learning Channel. Kubo.
Yet to be History Channel. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought, in the first couple of episodes, it would have been fine to establish which character is like a Jack or a Locke or a different archetype, like you're saying, Art. But instead, I think they just progressed through the entire first season. And since it was only six episodes long, I guess it can still be kind of setting the board of what the show's going to be like. And then you'll finally see the different pieces and different personalities and traits from the different characters rise to the top, hopefully, in season two. It was just all about maybe hooking the audience because, I mean, let's face it, this show came on the air at a pretty good time. Lost is off the air. You know, a lot of the big name, big hitters like Boardwalk Empire was just coming to a close. Frickin' Heroes is finally gone. And, you know, everyone's trying to fill that void of, okay, we got this fan base. Now we need them to, you know, come flock to us. And then I think it was just, you know, good to, first of all, go on AMC. I mean, HBO, you would have had a very maybe smaller audience because not everyone can, you know, get HBO or pay for it. So with AMC, I think, you know, it's basic enough cable that you can follow it. You can maybe get interested in it and maybe see if you like what you saw in the season one, maybe a little bit more in-depth exploration of these characters in season two. Perhaps.
But looking at the other side of the coin, to me, it's – I gotta stop saying that. But, you know, it's – I think people were going to see a zombie thing. Zombies on TV, I think, was sort of a done deal. I understand the powers that be and the creative team and everybody, I guess, were sheepish or a little worried because, you know, they're spending their own money because this is AMC's, you know, first produced show. So I understand that sort of trepidation, but at the same time, it's like, I think you guys are cool. But also, and going back to that Lost parallel, it's like, there is a, like, I can't even deny it. There are people who are upset about that finale. There are people upset about vast chunks of Lost and how they kind of just spun their wheels and everything. And
they still watch, though. That's the thing. They still watch. Yeah.
And I mean, obviously people are still going to watch Walking Dead. I mean, there is no doubt that we are all going to watch next season. I mean, that's a given. But at the same time, I do feel that, I guess you should have learned from other people's mistakes, you know, like,
right.
And, for this small season, I did feel this isn't it's to me I can't even quantify it as a season. It seems like I said, miniseries. It feels like a precursor to something greater. If you've seen Battlestar had a little miniseries before the show officially started, and that's what this feels like. It's just sort of, you know, like setting the table or setting the board, the chessboard, and here's the characters and here's what's going to happen next, and then big question mark. But, I mean, even watching these kind of episodes, I did feel like nothing really happened. Like, even when they get to the CDC, the questions are obvious questions, except for the Whisperer, and then even then we kind of had our own speculations. We'll leave Seth out of that, but like,
why?
To me... okay, what do you think the Whisperer was? Well, it'll be a big spoiler, but if you want to know, we'll delve into it.
You know what? I didn't really even care about the Whisperer. Yeah, I figured it was like a... the whisper trick at the end of Lost in Translation, and I didn't really care about it.
I think it was, I'm just taking a guess here, I think the whisper was, he was whispering to Rick, "I'm not wearing any underwear right now." That's just what I think it was.
There's 30 seconds left. Let's go with a bang.
You, me, I got some of that Cabernet in the back room there. Come on, baby. Again, this is just a theory. I don't know if it's official.
It's not confirmed by Jared Bond or anybody.
Well, I'm calling him. I'm calling him every day, but he's refusing my calls.
But, you know, it's just, to me, it was like, the Whisper to me didn't feel like, it didn't have that sort of emotional punch that other shows would have delivered on that. It was just sort of like, oh, there's a Whisper, bomb goes off, the place explodes or implodes or whatever the logic-defying things that you mentioned earlier, because, you know, the vacuum wouldn't exist or anything. And then they just kind of go off out of nowhere. I feel like, you know, like, I keep saying this, but, like, you know, creative decisions and creative choices, I did feel like there should have been something that they were going to. And going to that thing that I was talking about that I just learned, it's like all these people, they were obviously, they felt something, like, when the countdown was going off, and then they could have possibly died. And, you know, like, I guess to see them all trying to escape shows me that they don't want to die, but the bigger question is, but do they want to live? And that's my thing. There's nothing that any single one of these people, or I'm still trying to call them people, but like, you know, they're characters still, but I don't see them going towards anything. And I guess this is the major, you know, flaw of this season, is I don't see them going anywhere. Like, even Rick, you know, like, he wanted to get to his family, and now he is, now what? You know, like, and he's our focal point character. But,
well, I think it has a lot to do, yeah, with hope, and, you know, that's something everyone can relate to, is just, you know, hope for something better out there. And so, and then we get to see the story of survival, and it's going to be interesting to see, yeah, especially in the second season, who wants to survive? Who doesn't? That could tell for some good storytelling. I mean, we already saw at the season finale that Andrea was on the fence. She like, you know, the scientist guy, Dr. whatever, Dr. Jenner, was saying, look, there's nothing out there. You know, why would you want to go out there? And so it's all about finding that one glimmer of hope. Maybe there is a colony that survived. Maybe the government got the Western seaboard all fixed and squared away. Now they're, you know, moving towards east. Who knows? And so we all get to take that journey with them and see, you know, if that is going to tell or make for some good storytelling and still maintain us as an audience and our attention.
Yeah, I mean, but even that seems hopeful of a lackluster. I mean, not lackluster, but I mean, like, even the show didn't express those sort of motivations or anything. They were like, "Now we're going to France and we're going to save the world." Like, there was the way the show ended, we're just sort of, okay, let's hope for the best. They didn't even say that too. It was just like they drove on. And I did love that you said that, and it was beautiful. But at the same time, it's like you're adding hope to something that is kind of hopeless. Suffice to say.
Okay, well, fine. I'll call up Frank Darabont and say, listen, you should just stop with season one. I mean, it's obvious that these guys are hopeless. They're all going to die eventually. So why even bother? Why even – don't tug at my heartstrings.
I'd rather see them all die.
Just start with a new cast.
No. I mean, like, if this season went on for three – you know, if this show went on for three seasons, let's say, and at the end of the third season, the finale was, you know, little by little, people get picked off, you know, And they pick up stragglers along the way. You know, they join the ragtag bunch. And then, you know, eventually they just come to a point where zombies take over and they all die. I'd rather watch that than leave a cliffhanger. Like, not cliffhanger, but leave it dead at season one. You know, like, oh, we're off to find something else. Into my imagination of them, like, okay, they're just roaming the countryside. They're wagon training.
Yeah.
You know, around, you know, escaping zombies. I'd rather have, like, a finite ending.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, because, and I guess to better articulate my point, Gammy, is since we've read the comic, there are moments where they were just trying, they're a resolution of home, and they places like, I don't want to say Woodbury, but, you know, just like, there were like the farm or something, like,
I know
what communities,
you mean. Yeah,
they were going somewhere and building a future, or there was something like, okay, this is the world now, so let's cultivate it, let's try something, let's and I didn't see that for this, like, maybe season two will do that, like, obviously, but I feel like there was no resolution, and I do feel like Seth's idea is actually a pretty and it's not a bad idea, but I'm just saying, like, It sounds like a better show, because I do want that sort of spontaneity. I don't want people on the tracks. I don't want, oh, Andrew Lincoln's going to survive five seasons of the show because he's the main actor. You know, like, I want that kind of spontaneity. Like Lost, they were supposed to kill Jack until they saw Matthew Fox, and then, you know, gave beautiful performance. Huh. But I'm just saying, you know, like, we want that. Like, I don't want it, like, Kirkman wants that. He wants that sort of divergence, and he like, his favorite characters are like the people that they just created, like Meryl and stuff. And speaking of Meryl, not Meryl, but was it Daryl? I'm trying
Daryl.
To think.
Daryl's the brother. Meryl's the
racist. Yeah, no, I hate that guy.
Governor.
But Daryl, I feel like I want to see more of his character. Sadly. Like, because he seems more equipped in this world. He's got the right weapons. He's got the right attitude. There's something about his character that is interesting, more so than the guy that I should be interested in, Rick or Morgan and his son Dwayne. Like, I felt like those guys, like, that should be Rick and Carl or something like that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the guest actors were giving, like, far better performances. Like, Dr. Jenner, Norrell Emmerich, I love that guy. You know, like, these guys are just sort of knocking it out of the park. And because they're new and because they're fresh. And I don't know, creative decisions or whatever. But, you know, like, obviously, you know, hope, second season will be better. But at the same time, I can only critique what I've seen. And, you know, those are the highlights I saw, and those are the lowlights too.
Well, going back to Seth's, everyone dying comment, I think we should just get Alan Ball on the phone, and, you know, at the end of season two, he can do like he did with 6 Feet Under with the finale there, and show everyone dying, and then we can put Sia in the background, and then we can see, like, you know, the death dates, the birth and death dates. And then, like in 6 Feet Under, we'll see the last person, the youngest person, which would be Carl in this situation, living to be like 110 in this zombie-filled world. And, like, you know, having that look of, I survived it all on his face.
Walking the Green Mile.
Yeah, walking the Green Mile. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Jinx. That'd be awesome.
I mean, we'll see what they do for season two. Hopefully they get, you know, there's going to be an influx of new writing.
So, yes.
Oh, yes. We forgot to talk about that. We can finally talk about that.
I mean, well, you know, like, you know, there's going to be new writers, so let's, you know, let's get some crazy ideas. Like, you know, is it going to be like, you know, when obviously they got new writers on Heroes, even though I hate to bring it up, but they went from a storyline to just like crazy offshoots and like totally crazy stuff happening, you know. Maybe they'll do that and people will hate the show. Who knows? I hope they don't. I hope they don't do that. I just hope it's better writing and I'm more vested in the show.
That thing was weird. Like, the moment I saw that, I was like, I half a second I thought, like, oh, this is gonna be great, and then I was like, wait a minute. This, like I said, the show was uneven and it had writers. So you're starting from scratch. How frightening does that sound? What I heard, And I think the speculation was just, you know, Darabont fired all of his writers. But I think in reality, it was more like the show was ordered. Like, they were done, I think, like, I want to say June or something. Like, all the writers have finished their projects, and they all went on to do other things. They were only commissioned to do this season. Mm-hmm. And that was it. So, like, they all – they weren't – they left. they weren't, like, let go or anything. Like, one of the guys I think is doing another comic book series, Powers, the Dexter guy, Charles Eagley. And then – but, like, to me, it's just – I wasn't, like, slamming it or anything. I was just, like – the model, when we're going back to speculation, the model was like Frank Darabont wanted to do the show because he was the quote-unquote showrunner of the show, and he was trying to do like, well, I can pull a Stephen Moffat, or I can do the British model, the Canadian model, and I can run my show on my own, and then I'll just hire scabs or you know, just like freelance guys and write the show from that aspect, and like, we'll get Stephen King to write an episode, and I'm like. As great as that sounds, at the same time, you know, like, when Stephen King wrote an episode of The X-Files, that made sense, because X-Files has different structures, you know, they have the big mythology arcs, and then they have episodic shows, you know, one-shots or whatever, comic guys, but you can do that sort of thing, but, like, you can't really do that thing for this, and you need a writing staff, you mean, that's the point of a writing staff, to bounce off ideas and cultivate better ideas and, you know, just build up the characters and all that kind of stuff. And it would be nice, you know, like, you can get Mr. King. I feel cameo-wise, Mr. King should really do that instead of trying to do an episode. But, like, and we still don't know, actually, how the creative process was done for the show. And I can't wait to hear more about it. That's maybe commentaries or whatever. But... like, it seems to me like they need to work on that aspect. I want to see Robert Kirkman actually delve a little bit deeper and get into more characterization stuff. Because he did his episode. His episode was okay.
It was okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like those guys, the Vatos. It got a little weird. I was like, who wrote that part? Did it better not be you? But there was aspects, you know, like, so, like, but I want to see some senior writers. I would like to see, like, you are working on AMC. You have some great writers, like, under your umbrella. I want to see some of those guys do it. I want to see some Breaking Bad writers or something along those lines, because it's like you got to step it up, because this, you know, not really living up to its potential.
As far as I know, Brian K. Vaughan isn't doing anything. You know, why not just have him on there as, like, one of the head writers? I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually would. I think he's learned enough from his Lost work and doing a couple other television shows. I think he actually knows how to write some scripts now. He gets the format down. He has that comic aspect. I would like to see a lot of stuff. I mean, the Terriers writers, they got stuff to do now. Like that guy. I know, double edge, but I do. But hey, you know, like. Recycle. I don't know. That's sort of logic, but, like, you know, I want that sort of thing, you know, because, like, my fundamental flaw or my gripe or whatever you want to call it for this season has been the writing wasn't that strong. The actors are really only as good as the creative team. Directors really can. The director, I feel like, to me, is my idea, I guess, you know, they're the bridge between the actor's interpretation of the character based on the script and the tone or the rhythm of the shows. So, like, those guys, I think, they've done as good work as they've done. They've done Breaking Bad and Mad Men and all those stuff. Like, they have been using AMC directors. But, you know, the writing on the page, in this day and age, there's nothing more important than the writing on the page. And I want to see them step it up.
Agreed.
Okay, so I think we've been talking for a while. So, yeah, I just really got into it. But any final thoughts on The Walking Dead before? Because I'm not going to mention it, really, I guess, in passing. You know, I guess, but, hey, they won for Golden Globes or whatever.
By the way, I just nudge.
But, like, I guess for the next 10 months or so. So if you guys want to say anything, please do so right now.
No, I've said my piece. I'm good with Walking Dead. Come back in 10 months. I'll talk to you then.
Oh man, the wait. That's gonna kill me the most. It's just like, oh, remember, October 31st, The Walking Dead's back. I'm just like, oh yeah, that's right. They were doing the whole filming thing for season two. Now, if you want my views and more of Art's views too, just listen to Geeky Talkie episodes 42 and 44. We go in depth episode per episode. Spoilers though, tons of spoilers for the comic.
I mean,
and
really,
show.
Really, we're gonna be watching so much other television. The time fly by, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing. It's like, oh, I can't wait. You're standing there just kind of like waiting outside like the postman. It's like, he's going to give me some new episodes. And I'm like, really? In this, like, it's 2010. God. There's so many shows you can watch already on DVD or coming out. We have new shows to talk about.
Oh, Breaking Bad's coming back. And I'll just be hooked on Breaking Bad for a while. And I won't even remember The Walking Dead.
I know. I mean, it doesn't even matter. So it's just like, calm down. Just hang down. And, you know, exactly.
I want to know. I want to know.
And speaking of shows, lots of shows got nominated this week, or it's actually today, as of we're doing this recording, for the Golden Globes. And we're here to talk about a few of them. So before I get the full list out, I weighed in my two cents about The Walking Dead being nominated, but what did you guys think about that?
Cool that, you know, something in another, it's a different medium being adapted for another medium is getting the recognition, and, you know, the fans are gonna, of course, go behind it just because to get the message out and maybe get more Hollywood and television developers interested and get more, you know, properties in production. I mean, you mentioned Powers a little while ago. That's been in like development hell for years. So if that finally gets the, you know, green light because Walking Dead gets a Golden Globe, then who knows what floodgate this might open. So, you know, yes, it's good, but then also, like you were saying with all your critiques, does it really, the first season really stand above the other nominees, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, I like, to me, that, I mean, that's the big thing. Like, I understand why the Golden Globes did that. Golden Globes, and in case you don't know, they're sort of the Hollywood Foreign Press, or I think that's what the official title is, but I forgot the acronym, but it doesn't matter. They tend to nominate based on film. Like, because it's Frank Darabont, filmmaker Frank Darabont, and a lot of actors from movies and have done that stuff, and sort of that's the big transition. Not only that, but, you know, it's the big hot topic, you know, Entertainment Weekly, 5+ million people watching, it's in the zeitgeist, and they did this with True Blood, I think, last year, so, you know, this is the big water cooler show. If there's still water coolers out there. So, like, I guess that's why it made the cut, but I felt like, if we go through the big mess and everything, there were a lot of things that got nominated. I guess we're just focusing on TV because, you know, TV podcast, but there was some stuff that got nominated, like the musicals, I mean, the TV series musical or comedy thing is still weird to me. Like the shows that they nominate, you know, because it's like a lot of the, you know, those Showtime shows like The Big C or Nurse Jackie, which aren't really comedies.
Yeah, if anything, like they're dark comedies. Like they're not the ones you turn on for funny haha. Like, oh, wait, there's drama mixed into all this somewhere. Yeah. No, I hear where you come from for that.
Yeah, I mean, I never understood that at all. Emmys will do that too, and I always go like, either make a separate category or do not put them up there, because comedies, you know, comedies have jokes. They have it doesn't have to be rapid fire like 30 Rock or anything, but they make you laugh on certain moments. Like,
well, I mean, they have jokes in them. They just don't have a laugh track telling you to laugh. I mean, and they might be pretty. You know, as you said, a dark comedy. Is it dark jokes? Maybe it's a really depressing joke. It's a joke nonetheless. You know what I mean? It's hard to put a category. It's like, well, what do you want them to make a category for, like, dramedies?
Yes.
Damn it. Like, you took that. I was going to say that. Yeah.
That'd be terrible. That's the worst idea I've ever heard.
No, I want them to make it. Well, because for them to put that in a comedy fashion, It's not funny.
I mean, if I'm directing a drama and I just happen to throw one of my characters says a joke, am I automatically in a dramedy? You know, like, where's the line? Like, how do you classify a dramedy then? Is it, you know, parts? Just anything.
But these Showtime shows are designed to be half-hour dramas. So, but with comedic elements. So what else would I call them? Or what category should I put them under? Like, I never really thought Weeds was, like, laugh-out-loud hilarious. I mean, there's moments that I chuckle, but a lot of it's just sort of weird and dark. And it's to throw it in the same category as Community. I can't even throw it in the same category as Community because it's not even nominated. Like, that should be up there.
Community is a comedy.
Yes,
like, that's straight up comedy.
I know, and that's why I'm upset that it's not nominated. But going back,
but
to
I mean, your... it has dramatic elements in it, so.
So yeah,
it must
so,
be a dramedy, right?
Yeah, why not?
No, it's not.
Well, I mean, if you made a dramedy category, and if it was Big C, it was all the Showtime stuff, but it was like you also throw in Community, and then Louie, would you still and Louie won? Would you be upset? Because it's like, hey, it actually won an award. Because Louis never gonna get nominated as a comedy.
Why not? That's comedy. That's a comedian.
He's in the show. Exactly.
You know.
But I would love to see that. I mean, I don't even know what we're arguing about. But
I know.
I know it's fun, but I mean, to me, it's like I wish there was something you could do about that, or either expand the comedy, or I mean, expand the category, or do something. Because it's like I'm seeing Glee up there, and Glee's mainly up there for its musical aspects. And Glee is funny, yes, but I don't think like I said, it's that aspect. Like, to me. Okay, so here's the thing. It's 30 Rock, Big Bang, Big C, Glee, Modern Family, Nurse Jackie. About three of those are actually comedies. Or what I consider comedies, you know. I mean, I'm not even talking about laugh track stuff because, you know, the only thing that's really laugh tracky is Big Bang.
Yeah.
But, like, those shows, you know, like, they're funny. they make you laugh. They're designed to be humorous. I mean, they do have moments of heart, and that's a trend that I'd love to talk about later on our TV commentary section, but like comedies with heart, you know, like expanding the genre, as it were, like Louis and Community, like we talk about, like those episodes are really strong and stuff. And I don't know what you're supposed to do about those kind of shows, because I feel like they should be mentioned in the same breath. I mean, either add them to, or make it like 10 pages long or something. But
okay, I was gonna suggest go the way of the Academy Awards, and then just for the drama and the comedy categories for like series, just have like 10 nominations, and then you can put everything you want in there. And then, you know, if it wins, then apparently that's a comedy. Or just make a dramedy section and then give that 10 different slots as well, just to keep everyone happy.
Everybody needs 10 slots.
Everything's nominated, everything's going to win. There.
What if they did that? I would love to see that award show where it's just everything's nominated for everything.
Well, then, they would love that for the box DVD sets. Like, oh, this was nominated, so you should spend a couple extra bucks on this box set. That's what they live and die for, some of those companies.
You go to Best Buy, everything's nominated. Your favorite could possibly win.
See, is that what you want, Art? That's what you want.
You just want anarchy is what you want.
Yeah,
maybe,
that's what you want.
Maybe.
You want higher DVD prices. That's what you want.
You're
sick, Art. Do you work for a company? Who do you work for?
What? How do you sleep at night?
Well, first of all, when did you guys agree? What the hell happened? But I don't know. It's one of those food for thought sort of situations where, like, yeah. But anyway, moving on to other stuff. Finally. Okay, drama. So drama I think sounds a little bit better. It's easier for me to get behind. Boardwalk Empire, Dexter, The Good Wife, Mad Men, The Walking Dead.
Chances of The Walking Dead winning it over all those, like, you know, first of all, one in a million shot, I think. So I don't think you have to worry about that actually winning. I mean,
I'm pretty sure Boardwalk's gonna take that.
Yeah, I think.
Are you sure? Really?
Well, Scorsese, the film director thing that I mentioned before.
That's why I said pretty sure.
Pretty sure. Okay. We can go to Vegas and make the bets if you want. Yeah.
No, well, I agree. That was a really good series. But then I'm looking at Mad Men, And then I haven't finished Dexter yet, you know, blasphemy. But, like, usually those are really good contenders, especially, you know, on AMC recently with Breaking Bad.
They've been on for a couple seasons. They've already won. They've already garnered many awards. So it's kind of like, okay, I know it's old hat. People do like it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying just because the show is old, they're not going to win. But I think Boardwalk, you know, came through with the just sweeping.
Actually, I can see that now. Yeah, now that I'm more, I think about it, yeah.
They're the new kid. They're the new hockey, you know, the new
hockey. They made a bank. Yeah. I mean, look at the settings. Look at the, great. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the money. I mean, what was it? $2 million for, like, the pilot or something like that? To actually build the Boardwalk? So, like, I think it's practically a lock at this point.
Or maybe we're totally off base and it's the, we spent so much money and we didn't win shit.
It could be that.
Which you know, it's very disappointing to see it. Actually, it's not disappointing. Well, I like the show, so it is disappointing. But whenever you see someone spend a boatload of money on something and then they don't win any awards.
Meg Whitman. Yeah, right there. If you want to talk about it. Yeah.
It's actually fun to watch. And laugh.
Yeah.
Take that, Buscemi.
Well, Scorsese, now that he finally got his Oscar, now he's like, going to go collect the rounds. He's like, all right, now you're going to give me this. You're going to give that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was thinking about that. If Boardwalk wins, will Scorsese give a speech? You know, like, it'd just be like, it's about time, motherfuckers! Or something. That would be awesome.
Thank you. Good night. Yes.
That's Chalky White doing the motherfuckers part. But, dressed up, too. He came in character. But like I said, no Breaking Bad. Breaks my heart. These are the five contenders. Good Wife, I don't know. When I say Good Wife, to me it's like can we just, I guess a better theory to my whole dramedy, comedy kind of split thing would be like, what if you could do cable and then network and then see what happens? That'd be kind of interesting. But anyway, moving on to the actors. I don't want to get too in depth with the actors because I feel like you guys probably might not know some of them. Like, best actress is sort of like a mixed bag. I think everybody's going holy shit over this one because it's like Piper Perabo from Covert Affairs got nominated. So it was like a weird mix with her and then Katie Sagal for Sons. And everybody's like, hey, Katie, yay. And then it's like, Piper, why?
Piper who? She was in that movie about chicks in a bar.
Coyote Ugly.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Lost in Delirious is a much better movie.
I'm saying that's what people are saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean that's the thing. It's like everybody's going like crazy over that when I feel like Katie snuck in and is, I think, because, you know, Glenn Close kind of lost her position because Damage is off the air. So I think Katie's well deserved. Like I said, I don't want to get too delved into these because these are like a lot of shows that I've watched, but I don't think you guys have. But I think the big one, I guess, is the actors. So Buscemi, Cranston, Hall, Hamm, and Laurie for the respective shows of Boardwalk, Breaking Bad, Dexter, Mad Men, and House. So, I see no flaws in that list.
Well,
that's a tough field right there. It's like, any and all are deserving of an award. But then again, that brings me back to my point, is that it's the Golden Globes.
What's the Golden Globes to you, Chinatown?
Yeah, pretty much. Wait, the movie or the section of my city?
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Okay. I don't know. You know, it's the Golden Globes. People are just waiting for the Emmys, so...
Yeah, if anything, this will give, like, I mean, with this list specifically, I think that's a good look of what the Emmy's best performance by an actor in a television series is going to look like as well. And yeah, so if you look at, and if you look at the contenders, well, for the Emmys, Bryan Cranston won it twice in a row and three times in a row and much deservedly so. So to have, you know, new contenders, well, I mean, Steve Buscemi, I never really saw him as a leading man. Like, if anything, yes, he was. Go ahead.
You think Mike? I'm hearing Michael Pitt should have got more love, but I don't know if that's as a
supporting. Was that the was that his number two man?
Jimmy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I thought Jimmy really was, like, the lead of that show, if anything. And so when I see Buscemi in the category, I think of his other work and his little run on The Sopranos. And then I look at where he is now with this. Yes, he was good, but I don't think he was that good. I think it could still go up to someone else besides Buscemi. Like, they'll give the series to Boardwalk Empire, but not the actor.
I don't know. I don't know, because Buscemi's never really done this type of character before. He's always really comedy, goofy, or maybe the creepy guy off to the side. He's never really been... I'm trying to rattle my mind of the roles that he's played. He's never been the guy in power. He's never been the top dog, if you think about it.
He's been the mailman, and he's been the guy... Fargo, I think, was probably a strong one.
Chipper, Mr. Pink.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. And
best
performance.
A couple Adam Sandler movies that he's in, you know.
Obviously, audiences are going to see him in a different light because of this nomination. But I think this, since it's his first nomination, which is kind of funny, too, because it's also Bryan Cranston's first nomination for a Golden Globe. Like, he's been an Emmy darling, but for Golden Globes, you know, like, this is his first. He finally got his ass up there.
You know, the foreign press, they're a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to delve too much into I think we'll get to it. No, just the absurdity of award shows in general.
Yeah.
We'll get to that once you know, it's time for those to start up
officially.
But yeah, so it does seem a little strange. I think the Laurie's won a couple. I think Ham's won a couple. So I think Hall. I think everybody's pretty much won one except for the big two, Cranston and Buscemi. So, you know, first run out, I would actually like to see Buscemi. You know, I think it's obviously well-deserved. I would love to see him give a speech. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that was our short review of the Golden Globes.
Yeah, Golden Globes.
And what, you're going to be sexist now? We're just going to talk about the leading men, but we're not going to talk about the women?
Oh, I did talk about the women, but I felt like you didn't, like, okay, so, like, have you seen The Good Wife? You know
Listen, I've seen Glee, I've seen 30 Rock, and I've seen Nurse Jackie in United States of Terra. I have not seen The Big C, though.
I've not seen The Big C. It's not, it's too convoluted to me. I mean, I think Lenny's going to win, but I don't care.
Lenny was also in the John Adams miniseries, right, with Giamatti?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I know she was a great actress from that. I don't know if she was nominated then, but I'm willing to watch it, if there's a different character in there.
Uh-huh. But it goes under the whole umbrella, like I said before, with the Showtime shows. It's like you're nominated for best comedian or, you know, best comedy actress, but it's like you're not funny.
I see.
Your show doesn't, you know, it's like all those Showtime shows with all the leading women, they like, Falco is the funniest out of all of them, and she only says like a couple like quick lines, and they're never as good as what Jane Lynch does on Glee. I'm not slamming the women, I'm just saying, like, acting wise it's kind of hard to really kind of get behind them.
No, it's just your show, you sexist pig, but you know, I'm just going out for the girl power, you know.
You know, because Lenny, you know, she'll be listening to this, and then she's been looking for a date for the Golden Globes in January.
And guess what? You're going to get dumped.
God. With that, let's do a weird transition into the race. Seth, I've been talking for quite a long time. I think we should break down the game film one more time for this season finale.
The Amazing Race! Man, that show was really good. Except the finale. The finale. Amazing Race always lets me down on the finale. In the past couple of seasons, it totally has. Mm-hmm. The season is filled with treachery and conniving runners. You know, people always trying to figure out and get ahead of the other ones. And then the finale is devoid of any such confrontation. It's kind of lackluster. It just goes, yep, okay, and that's how that happens, and you're done.
This was like the worst finale I've seen.
It's probably the worst one I've seen in the past maybe 5-6 seasons. It was just blah. It was the white bread toast with no jam on it, you know, on the table of pastries in the morning. You know
Holy
I mean?
Shit, like, was that an analogy?
You got the jelly donuts, and you got the bagels with lox and cream cheese, and you know, you got all these fruits and pastries and danishes, and this season finale was the unbuttered, toasted white bread. That's all it was. Just bland and dry. Blah.
Wow.
It was unfortunate, because it was a very good season. Just unfortunate ending. I mean, that's what happens when, you know, three teams going into the final are all basically equals to each other. And it started off, you know, in South Korea. South Korea, and they all get on the same plane, even though they left at different times. They all get on the same plane to LAX, Final End City. It was Los Angeles.
Yeah, with the horrible song.
And they all, you know, get off the plane, get in taxi cabs, go to Long Beach. They have to get on, you know, a giant crane, do a little bungee jumping. And there was a little controversy because was it Brooke? No, not Brooke and Claire. The cat and Nat. She was afraid of heights. I think Natalie was afraid of heights. So yeah. There was a little hesitation there. It looked like the other teams are going to go before them. No, everyone went 1, 2, 3. They went probably in the matter of 15 minutes of each other. Like, they were all waiting at the top, waiting for each other to bungee jump so they could go down. And then they get into a helicopter to go to a secret location, which was the Rose Bowl. They flew to Pasadena from Long Beach to Pasadena, get off at the Rose Bowl, you know, and have to help decorate a float with flowers, you know, one of the traditional Rose Bowl parade floats that have live flowers on them. So they had to do some of that, and they all kind of did it without any problems. The only problem was I think Nat forgot to put water in these little rose holder, you know, individual rose holder, but it looked like she did it in the matter of 30 seconds, you know, magic of editing. But looks like she corrected herself and was off. And the only major problem was that they got clues and, you know, the riddles, and that would lead them to their next location. And none of them knew. This is the downgrading. This is the end of Western civilization right here, folks. No one knew. The first clue, if you didn't watch, was who is Sancho Panza's master? Now, I couldn't believe that no one knew that. Out of two doctors, they have PhDs, mind you, two television hosts. I mean, maybe they know. Maybe they sell the book on their show.
Who is selling? I don't remember the joke, but I mean, who is selling that book?
Well, the book is Man of La Mancha.
Man of La Mancha.
And Sancho Panza in Man of La Mancha stars Don Quixote, mm-hmm. his trusty side companion, Sancho Panza. And no one knew that. I couldn't believe that. I was yelling at my television. I mean, they made a musical out of it. Jeez, you know, like, no one knew that. And then there's, you know, the whole, as it comes down to, and it always does, in The Amazing Race. And they've said it time and time again. The contestants know, the producers know, even Phil, the host, knows, is that it all comes down to the taxi driver. The taxi driver. Out of all the things on the race, the taxi driver. They all get in cabs, and I believe, who was the last guy? I don't know their names. I'm sorry. Art, help me out. Who's the guy? The last remaining male contestant on the show?
Oh, crap.
Thomas.
It was Jill and Thomas?
Jill and Thomas. He had mentioned, he said, we've flown all the way around the world, and the language barrier is greater in the United States than it was in any other country. Like, and that was quite, you know.
That was almost like, what the hell? where am I?
Exactly. I mean, I knew where they were driving around, but you don't know, if you don't know Los Angeles, you don't know what you're looking for.
I did like that, though. It was like, what's the internet?
Yeah, you know what's the internet? Do you have a computer? I have GPS. No, that's not a computer. That is not a computer. So anyways, after that little boffo there, Jill and Thomas were were basically out of the race because they got a bad taxi driver. The other two, they go on to Quixote Studios here in Los Angeles. There's Quixote Studios, and they have many different studios around the city. And the one they had to go to was in
the Griffin Park one.
Griffin Park, yeah. And they find a soundstage, and there's Bob Eubanks, good old Bob Eubanks, a host of Card Sharks and Newlywed Game, and
some other things.
Yeah, some other things. You know, you might recognize him. I think he hosts the Rose Bowl Parade every year.
Didn't he do something else too? Isn't there like allegedly anti-Semite or something like that?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't doubt it though. It's kind of hard to do that here in Hollywood. You know, that'd be a really dumb move. I'm not saying that they run anything, but
what are you?
Hey, you know, I'm Jewish, so
I know. I was like, what are you afraid of?
Yeah, I'm not afraid. So, anyways, sorry guys. So then, of course, as they do every year, they do the memory test. Now, usually, it's what task could you do in this country? Who got eliminated in what order? But this was a good little twist. They had never done this one. You had to remember who the greeters were in each country. In each country, if you haven't watched the show, in each country they have a native of that country wearing native garb and speaking the language, and they welcome you to said country. And you had to remember the, I believe it's 8 or 9, greeters.
11.
Stop. 11, sorry. There are 11 legs of the race. So you had to remember all 11 greeters for each pit stop. Out of, I don't know, they had a screen of, it looked like it was
like 30 something.
5 or 6, yeah, 30, but they rotated.
Yeah.
They changed, so they probably got to pick 11 out of maybe 60 to 90, I don't know. I don't know if it just changed twice, you know, it went back and forth, or it changed 3 times. But it was quite a few. But you know what? Both team, Broken Clair, that they showed Broken Clair and they showed Cat and Nat doing it, and both of them seemed like they zipped through it without a problem.
Because they took notes.
They kind of stuttered, going, oh, maybe it's this guy. Oh, no, it's really this guy. But other than that, they had no problem whatsoever, and they flew through that. And then they went on to the pit stop, which was Greystoke Manor, something like that, in Beverly Hills. And that was another power of editing trick they did. They were like, oh, who's going to get there first? They're driving. And, you know, it was quite obvious that Matt and Kat had – finished that task far along, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes before Broken Clair. And Matt and Kat went on to become the first all-female team to win. You know, that was the big doing. They took maybe about, what, 10 minutes at the end of the show talking about that they were the first female team.
Well, and not to mention the other countless mentions of Phil mentioning it, like in the last couple of weeks, like somewhere around, I'm trying to remember, like week, there was only like 5 or 6 racers left, and there was just like somebody I think realized, holy shit, I think we're gonna break history, so they kept having Phil say it, like, you could be one of the female teams to do it. And it, to me, I didn't understand the narrative behind that. I mean, I guess you know, like, it's history, but to me it's just like you're kind of burying the lead. It's just like, let Nat and Kat win as people, or Brooke and Claire win as people. Yeah. As opposed to, you know, just, oh, they're women. Yay.
I did look in the past, and there were other several seasons where I don't know if the producers did it on purpose, but they kind of stacked the deck of all female, you know, an all female team. There was one season where there was like 5 or 6 female teams out of 11 teams. You know, there was like 5 female, all female teams.
Oh yeah, so this season and indeed did that. And
Four, I believe they had 4 all female teams. And they, you know, 4, 5, that's pretty standard when they're trying to push. They want to break that barrier, apparently.
Yeah, going on even deeper under that thread, a lot of the male-male teams, or, you know, just couples or whatever, married, whatever you want to call them, those teams, they seemed weaker. Now, I mean, not physically weaker, but, you know, I guess just an overall feeling of this is – like you said, they really stacked the deck. They really want a female team to win. So like, because it's like it was like Team Glee, like what are they gonna do? Or the theater group, or you know, or the father son team. You know, like they didn't really seem physically dominating or mentally dominating. They didn't seem anything special about them. They seemed more like they were just sort of character wise. You know, like they had great charisma, so that's why we got them.
I mean, the race has shown that you don't really have to be super strong, super athletic, super smart to win.
I mean, that's understood, but I didn't see any.
Like when the hippies won, when was that? Season 11 or something like that.
And the
crazy old hippies, and they won. You know, that was awesome.
That was awesome. But I mean, just what I'm saying. You know, just going on that thread. It didn't seem like a lot of the physical teams seemed like the women. You know, like they had the volleyball team and they're like physically fit. I didn't see any male, you know, like really physically or anything. Mr. Notre Dame, I think that was like the guy that was Thomas.
He was Notre Dame. Yeah, Chad was from Florida.
Yeah, and Chad was from Florida. And then I did going back on that, you know, that male La Mancha Don Quixote thing. Like, dude, you kept talking about how you were from Notre Dame and stuff, and you didn't get it.
Like, No one's ever heard of that book. No one knows the character. Maybe it's because I like trivia and I play a lot of trivia games. I watch Jeopardy every night. I do that type of crap. You know, maybe it's that reason why I was so mad. But the season is over and it's just kind of done. You know, was it interesting? Yeah, I'm happy they won. It wasn't a great finale, though.
The finale was horrible. The finale was like...
From 1 to 10, I give it a 3. You know, it wasn't that good.
Yeah, I mean, they were really pushing the 2 out of 3 chance that one of the team was going to be female win. The promos heavily promoted the fact that it was either Brooke and Claire or Nat and Kat. Like, they didn't even bother mentioning Jill or Thomas. I think that kind of led into that what was going to happen in this particular episode. Once they got in that cat taxi, game over. So, you know, you can only root for two people. And since Nat and Kat were so dominating, they set such a huge lead. Like the moment they finished their little challenge at stage 7, you know, it was just they have it. so you're just kind of waiting for them to be happy and do that stuff, which ain't a bad thing. But I guess... I mean, to me, if I nitpick even more on how kind of manufactured this finale was, I mean, the challenge, the bungee jumping thing seemed like kind of a wash as a challenge because there wasn't really anything bad about it. Obviously, I think I want to say the blonde Nat or Kat, she had fear of heights, but obviously she was going to pony up for it because, you know, $1 million if one was going to eat food and she was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
That, like, obviously, you know, like, hey, you're doing this or you're dying. That sort of logic. So, but it, there was nothing really physical about it. It was just jump. And then the next challenge, the clues kind of pissed me off because it's just like you could just go online. They weren't. Like, we knew it because we're smart, but to me, like, it was just very, like, just go online or talk to somebody. That didn't really seem that beneficial. And then the final one at the end, where you can take notes, and people have been taking notes for this challenge since the hippies did it, like, all those years ago. So even that challenge isn't as interesting as it is, because it's just like, dude, take notes, and you technically, and if you get there first, you probably have won $1 million. So 1, 2, 3, not that interesting. So, I mean, this is very lackluster. So I'm hoping, and I'll let you do the big beats on this new announcement. But I'm really hoping the new season really kind of kicks into overdrive now.
Well, I just want to say just before I go into this new announcement that the taking the notes thing probably. That didn't help, you know, because Nat and Kat both took, it looked like extensive notes because they were flipping back and forth through a couple notebooks. That didn't seem to help them at all, considering you had to remember people's faces. And unless you're a really good, you know, court artist, you know, that's your job. They probably didn't draw each guy or each female. So.
What if they did? I would have lost my mind.
Yeah, that was more of a you had to remember, but you know you only saw so many people dressed in crazy garb. So.
Yeah, I mean, like it's like, oh, it's Kenya, so then it must be. Yeah.
So the new announcement, the new season 18 of The Amazing Race is what's it entitled?
Unfinished business.
Unfinished business. These are team. So it's basically the reverse of an all-star season. These people aren't all-stars. They're more fan favorites that ran a really good race but did not win. They placed maybe high somewhere, or maybe they didn't place at all. Maybe they got voted off early, or not voted off, but they got eliminated early, but they did not win the race. So I have the 11 team lineup.
Wow, 11? That's good.
They have 11 teams. As normal.
Yeah, the way they presented it when I saw the promo was just like every team could possibly be on there.
Yeah,
it was all over the place.
They showed a lot of teams. One thing I was kind of mad at, they showed a lot of teams from season 7 that just happened.
Yeah.
And you know, people I was watching with were also very angry. They were saying, hey, wait a second, you know, we just saw them. They're bringing these people back. And then after watching the promo again, or the commercial again, I said, no, that's just a trick. That's just saying, like, look how many people there are. Look at all these teams. We could bring back anyone. You never know. So here's the lineup in no particular order. I know there are some fan favorites in here, and maybe some people you don't even remember. So off the bat, team number one, Jet and Cord from season 16. That's
Cowboys.
That's the Cowboys. Cowboys are a big fan favorite. Everyone really liked the Cowboys. I know I'm in this boat. I really wanted to see the Cowboys win, and they didn't win. They lost to the Brothers in season 16, and that was in San Francisco, I believe, in city. Team number two is Mel and Mike. Now, Mel and Mike are a father and son team. Mike is Mike White. He's a writer, actor, director out here in Los Angeles. School of Rock, yeah. Mike Schneebly. Or is it Matt Schneebly? He played Schneebly.
Schneebly.
Anyways, yeah, Mel and Mike, they're back. He's back. He's there from season 14. Third team is Zeb and Justin. And from season 15, if you remember him, they were friends, and I think Zev had the learning disability. He was kind of slow. Mm-hmm. That's not an insult to him. He fully acknowledged this on the show. But they were a really good team. Their big standout was when they forgot their passports.
Yes.
Were in Ireland, and they left their passports when they checked in the pit stop and had to go back and find them.
Hopefully they get vindication for that.
Yeah, hopefully they will always keep that fanny pack with all their travel documents on them at all times. The fourth team is from season 14, Jamie and Kara. They are ex-NFL cheerleaders. They previously held the record for highest finished female team. They finished second in season 14. And they until just now, Nat and Kat won. They were the leading female team, the highest finishing female team.
Well, now they have something to prove.
Yeah, now they have something to prove. Like, hey, you know what? We can win. You know, we're not gonna let these two doctors. You know. We'll show those doctors. Team five is Kent and Vixen. They were from season 12. I know that's reaching kind of far back, maybe for some people to remember. I made a note next to them. They're the weirdos. If you do some research, they were also in the promo. They have the crazy hair, the makeup.
Oh, the goths.
Goths. They're weirdos. They were done in by in season 12. They were done in because they couldn't drive a stick shift. So, good note to if you're listening and you want to try out, learn to drive stick shift before you go to any you try out for the show. Because if you get picked, it's guaranteed you're going to drive stick shift in another country. Team six is Ronaldo and Christina. They're also from season 12. no one maybe might not remember them. They're, you know, for lack of a better term, they're Asian team. Father, daughter. No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they were good. I don't know if they're a fan favorite. Maybe the producer just liked them. Maybe it's like, hey, who can we get that's available? I don't know.
I think that's more filling the parent.
Parent child.
Yeah, yeah. Father, daughter. Well, now that we have.
Wait. Here's Team 7. It's Gary and Mallory from season 17 that just ended.
They got
Gary and Mallory back. You know, they finished. they were the fourth or fifth. No, they were the fifth team. They came in fifth place.
I wonder why they showed her saying that. Like, I want to do the race again.
Yeah, so they brought them back. You know, maybe they like their. Maybe they're gonna see the southern accent, southern hospitality thing between the Cowboys and Gary Mallory. I don't know. Team 8 is from season 14. A lot of 14 teams in here. Season 14, they brought a lot back. Is Kishi and Jen? They were, you know, they're very tall, slender, African American females who were, I believe, best friends. They were really good on season 14. They were strong competitors, but
yes.
they were middle of the pack runners. Got eliminated. But Unfinished Business brought him back. And another season 14 alumni is Margie and Luke. If you don't know out there, Luke was the first deaf Amazing Race runner contestant. So bring back Margie and Luke. That was a good dynamic. She had, you know, relay, you know, all the race news to him in sign language. Uh-huh. I don't know if they were strong competitors. They were just really interesting competitors to watch.
Yeah, I think they were good. And then it got a little weird because I think that's why they brought them back with Jen and Kisha, because there was a little animosity between them. I can't remember exactly what happened, but there was.
Yeah, a little bit.
There was a little bit. So I think they hope to rekindle that.
Team 10, also from 14. That's, and if you're counting at home, that's five teams from season 14.
They really stacked the deck on this one.
Yeah, they are stacking the deck from season 14. I guess people like these people. And this was the team of Amanda and Chris. I believe they're a dating couple. I don't remember them having much depth other than that.
Maybe married life has changed them if they actually are married. I haven't done any. Let me do some research while you.
I researched. I didn't find if they were married or anything. They just kind of look like a kind of blah all-American couple. If you remember in season 16, the team that season 15. The blonde couple, they kind of just like all American looking, someone you don't really care for but don't root against type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't root for them, but you don't root against them. And the final team, the final 11th team,
come on, tell me.
15.
All the way from Harlem.
You know them, you love them. Light Time and Big Easy, they're coming back. Are loving the Fly Time and Big Easy. Play some sweet Georgia Brown right here. You know? The Globetrotters are back to do more globetrotting. So they will be all over the world again on the Amazing Race.
So I have a quick question.
Sure.
Sorry to butt in. So all these guys didn't make it. So how embarrassing is it going to be for the first team to get eliminated? Like, sorry, you were a loser in previous seasons, and congratulations. Now you're the number one loser to be going home first.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that none of these teams were ever the first eliminated team, I believe.
They were long enough to be a fan favorite, though.
Yeah, they were okay. Around some of these teams made it all the way to the final leg and actually crossed the finish line. And some of these teams, you know, were eliminated, you know, towards the end or in the middle of their races. None of these teams actually were right off the bat gone. You know, they all kind of hung around a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a death pool right now?
No, I don't believe so, since this
nobody dies on the race.
No, I mean, okay, yes, obviously not. But do you guys have any opinions? Just
what were the odds? 21.
I don't know. I just looking at this list, I'm going to say I think the top right now are the Cowboys. you know, the Cowboys will probably be high on my list of teams that are going to do well. Maybe the Globetrotters. The Globetrotters did do well. The only thing that really did them in were the thinking challenges. I remember one in particular where you just had to read the time on a watch to get the code for like a briefcase.
Yeah.
And the clue basically, you know, showed that. And they had a hell of a time. They stood there for a while. I put Jet and Cord, and they just did freaking so well on their race. They did really, really well. I'm kind of looking at the other teams. I don't really know. But, you know, that's the beauty of the Amazing Race is one team that, you know, can figure something out and another team can't. One team can actually find a better flight someplace than the other teams and get ahead. You know, that's the beauty of the races. Just because you're not as strong or you're not as smart doesn't necessarily mean you're not better than the other team. You know?
Yeah, and going along with that point, Seth's right completely. Because, I mean, the races, a lot of these people should have won. I feel like if it wasn't for a mistake here or there. Like, yeah. The passport thing took out some people, and, you know, thinking took out others. But, yeah, I feel like all these people should be able to, if they were preparing properly, and not just riding on the coattails of the charisma that they've received in their past races. Because it's kind of funny how, especially the how season 14 heavy this thing is, even though that's, like, what, like 18 months ago or something like that? Like, I guess the farthest
would be... Season 14 was maybe, I don't know, 3 years ago.
Season 14, really?
Yeah, because we're on season, you know.
We're on season 17.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, but it
Well,
takes...
if you do two a year.
Yeah, maybe. Because we usually do, they do casting 1 month, and then finalize casting the next month, do location scouting the next month, and then film like 2 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So within a span of, and they shoot what, for a month, let's say? So in the span of, say, 6 months, they shoot a show before editing it, you know.
But to go to get to Cammy's point for my death pool, I'm thinking probably Jamie and Kara for my death watch. And holy shit, Jamie did Playboy? What the fuck? My search just
kicked in. I told you, they're ex-NFL cheerleaders, man. and then they get on a TV show. Oh, they're prime time.
Prime time for Playboy.
For Playboy, yeah. Playboy Pickens.
I feel like some of the because I haven't seen them do anything for a while. I mean, well, not 2D, but anyway. I feel like Jet and Cord probably got ready. You know, like as soon as they knew, they're like, okay, we're getting, let's start reading books and let's get ready. I think a lot of the people, Margie and Luke can surprise me. I think they're wild cards. But like them and Amanda and Chris and all those people, I think are just kind of going. They're just kind of, you know, I don't see them going any farther, and I don't see this podcast going any farther too. Just wrapping up, I do feel. Good list. There's a lot of favorites. I love Flight Time Big Easy and a couple others that I can't wait to see them. I think that's the big thing. I love, and really wrapping this up, I love All-Star Seasons. I could talk about some other ones that are currently out right now. I think Top Chef, Masters, and All-Stars.
This is why I like having these conversations with you, Art. Because I hate All-Star Seasons. I think they're the worst idea. I think All-Star Seasons are producers being lazy because they don't want to go do casting. I hate them. I hate All-Star Seasons.
He has a point. He has a point. I can see that. Yeah.
He has a point. Thanks
but
that, I mean,
that is another topic of
That is another topic.
The last little bit of information is next season, season 18, Amazing Race, will be in HD, finally.
Oh, why did it take so long? This is their flagship show.
Hey, you know, you got 11 cameramen, 11 sound operators running around with...
But you won like 8 Emmys.
22 other people. Yeah, you know.
Travelocity alone should have just paid for just to show their own locales and stuff.
Yeah, no, this is true. That roaming gnome shows up on the show quite often. Yeah, so I'm hoping I'll watch. Don't get me wrong. I don't like it. I mean, as I said, this isn't technically an all-star since they're all losers. But
all losers.
Well, I guess the Top Chef one is all. They're all all-stars, but not all of them won, right?
Yeah, they're a higher pedigree.
Unfinished business. I'll watch. I'm gonna stick with the Cowboys.
Even though I hate that title.
Yeah. But you know, we'll see it. HD. It'll be good. And I'll just have to wait till season 19 when I'm on it.
And speaking of roaming, I think it's time for us to roam.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So this has been a really, really long episode, and this is even longer now, thanks to my new taped live format. So taped live to tape. That's what Danny told me about. Just full on. We're just gonna throw this up as soon as possible. So I gotta say thank you guys for joining us, especially you, Camry, for taking time out on your busy schedule.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me. Oh, I'd love to come back sometime.
Totally. Yeah, because I really want to see what else you got. I want to see what else you're into, too.
So. You know, it's funny because I do watch a lot of television shows. It just seems like I don't watch the same stuff you guys are watching. So, yeah, if you ever do a British television show, I'm all over it. Yeah. Okay. Besides Doctor Who, besides the obvious. You know.
Besides the British sci-fi.
I mean, hello, everyone should be watching this show.
So if you want to hear us talk about British television or horror or Community or something totally random, some dramedies apparently we talked about.
even though Seth doesn't believe it.
You'll just, you know, email us at, what's that? I always get it wrong.
TVDivision@gmail.com.
TVDivision@gmail.com. For all your questions, comments, yelling at us, you know, whatever.
Yelling at us.
You can also visit us at
the main site at TVDivision.com. That's our new web address.
So simple.
And
are you guys going to be on iTunes soon, just out of curiosity?
Probably.
Work in progress?
Okay. Yeah, we
just wondering.
We're waiting. We want to see how this iTunes
goes. Maybe after the New Year's.
Okay. Yeah,
maybe. You know, I mean, come on. That's one of my – I think that's my top resolution. So
there you go.
We'll get to that when we get to it. But where can we find you, Cammy?
Well, you can find me every week at cammyscomiccorner.com. Right now in this December little recess, I'm just taking it easy. But usually the weekly reviews go up every Sunday. And then on Wednesdays, you can listen to the audio podcast, Geeky Talkie and Art, along with Freddie and Jesse. They've all been on multiple times through past episodes. And it's just a little geeky discussion about whatever. For instance, this upcoming week, it's going to be about World of Warcraft Cataclysm. And I'm going to be talking to an expert on that.
Hey, no, I like that. So
you do? Wow, thank you. I thought you were being facetious. Thank you.
Be sure to listen into it. Yeah.
Okay.
Wait. Are you guys talking about the book or the game?
The game. I didn't know if there was a book. Maybe she'll tell me.
Okay. I think you should help him out.
There's a novel.
All right.
It's prior to Cataclysm. I saw it at Barnes and Noble's.
Is that your nerd voice? Hello.
Yeah, that is.
And with that, ladies and gents, I am Arthur Robinson for Seth and Cammy, saying we're signing up.
All right.
Bye, guys. Throw away your time.